If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hello, welcome back. Chris, welcome back, guys. I am Great and Powerful Mystery.
I'm J-Clone 9000.
And you got some stuff to talk about.
Oh, yes, we do. Stay tuned, everybody, or stay tuned or come see us. We are doing a live show with, or called, The Bizarre Cornfield. With,
Believing in the Bizarre podcast.
I always screw their name up. Believing in the Bizarre. It's a mash between Believing in the Bizarre and Cryptids of the Corn podcast. We're doing a live show June 13th in Ada, Ohio, and location at the end from 5 to 9. Tickets are available in the links below or on our website, cryptidsofthecorn.com.
Oh, I got to do that.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, they're available in the links below. It's $15 ticket to come see us live. Again, that's June 13th this summer, 2026, in Ada, Ohio, the Bizarre Cornfield. Come check us out. Come see us live. Hear us talk. Give us a good speech. We're going to mash talk, you know, anything between cryptids and UFOs and all the fun overlap that is. And we hope to see you guys there. We're really looking forward to it. We're also going to be speaking at the Arkansas Cryptid Fest this summer.
Mm-hmm.
What's the date on that again? That one's escaping me at the moment.
June 6th.
June 6th. Okay, June 6th. Oh, yeah, duh. It's the weekend before ours. So put on by Drunken Cryptids Podcast, Matthew Orton. That one's going to be it should be a very fun time. I'm really looking forward to that. A lot of guest speakers. It's their first festival ever putting on, getting the Arkansas
We're
Cryptic
speaking
Fest.
Of the Arctic Cryptic Festival.
Cold. And then last but not least, we're also speaking at, which we just received the flyer, and I'm going to pull it up right now because it made me go, huh? But the Indiana Bigfoot Conference, September 25th and 26th in Nashville, Indiana. We also will be speakers alongside with the likes of Mark DeWorth, MK Davis, Leroy Nail, and Mike Familant.
Don't look at me if you're asking me to read something.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, I'm not the best either. And then yours truly, Crypts of the Corn podcast, where that'll be our first time ever attending the festival. So obviously it'll be our first time speaking as well. So if you guys would like to come see us live, come meet us in person, if you want to shake our hands, any of these events this coming summer and fall, come see us. All the links are in the description below.
Come see us.
Yep.
Today we're going to talk about jungle walruses.
Oh, okay.
This may be a two-parter. There's a lot here. So I don't know if you've ever seen the pictograph art. We're going to break it down, but it's in Africa. Have you ever seen that piece of art?
Oh, I don't think I have.
Well, there's a creature, you know, that fits that. We're going to talk a lot about it, but have you ever heard of a jungle walrus?
I'm trying to think here. I don't think so. I can't even think of a good joke. I'm sure there's one there. I don't think so, no. Jungle walrus. There's one thing that comes to mind, actually. I've heard of one. And that was that elephant seal that made it up to, it's not even a walrus, but the elephant seal that made it up that, what was it, the Amazon? The Amazon River? No, where was it?
Oh, there's one in Chile. That's the other side of, not connected to the Amazon.
Okay.
And then there was Australia, Neil the Seal.
Ah, Australia.
And New Zealand. But this is the Ding-o-neck. The ding on ek. The ding on ek.
Okay.
An African cryptid.
Okay.
But there's a couple, there's stories about it and everything, but its depiction for anybody that's not looking at it shows to be kind of roughly walrus shaped, but it has four limbs and a big paddled or fluked tail with a small head and big tusk.
Fluked?
Mm-hmm.
Dang.
Like a whale.
Right, yeah.
But yeah. We're using an article titled Jungle Walruses, a Perplexing Pictograph, because it kind of breaks it down. It's really, really weird. I didn't know. I guess I don't think of a lot of South Africans, like, I guess pictographs. I don't think of it. There's a bunch now that from doing this, like looking into this. Just wasn't something I'd think about. It's very, you know, when I think
like
of pictographs.
K-Mart?
Yeah. I really just, I guess, think Aboriginal, because it's even Aboriginal style to me, like,
yeah,
not knowing anything, you know.
But yeah, I mean, pictographs are all around the globe, right?
Fun fact, do you know the Amazon rainforest is roughly the same size as the continental United States?
I don't think I was that aware of it. Good to know.
I mean, you understand how big the Amazon rainforest is in South America?
Gigantic. I mean, yeah, it puts things into perspectives.
So the article starts with Adam from Perth, Australia, is a famous animal adventurer, jungle explorer, and co-host of the History Channel's very popular Kings of Pain show. He has he's a very long, outstanding friend of the Facebook, or of this, the author of this, interested in mysterious and undefined animals, basically brought him up, like, introduced him to this when they started doing research of a walrus-like creature from Africa. It's really only known in cryptozoological circles, let alone beyond them. Yet, Obscura represents a fascinating and perplexing Bushman rock painting pictograph. So we're going to talk about that.
All right.
Many years ago, a pygmy from the Democratic Republic of the Congo's Intrian Forest, or Sir Henry Johnson, famously discovered the okapi in 1901, identified a picture of a walrus shown to him by aptly named big game hunter John A. Hunter.
That's a great, perfect name.
And it's like a cartoon name.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So this pygmy man that lived out here where the okapi was discovered was shown a picture of a walrus.
Okay.
And he identified it as something.
Oh, something he had already seen.
Yes.
Okay.
He said it was a savage nocturnal beast that lived in the deepest parts of the rainforest.
Okay.
But not very, very walrus sounding, is it?
I mean, no, not really.
Savage nocturnal beast in the inside of a rainforest.
Right. No, I mean, you don't typically think walrus ain't the first thing that comes to mind.
Not surprisingly, Hunter first dismissed the claims of a jungle walrus as nothing more than the pygmy's desire to please him. And he noted this in his book, Hunter, 1952.
Okay.
And we've talked about this with like Mokele and Mbembe. Keep in mind, this is the same area. Like we're talking, you know, Mokele and Mbembe and the African elephant or the African elephant killers and all this stuff, you know.
Mm.
Africa has really, really some big cryptids, like large in size.
And well, Africa's just huge.
I mean, it's a continent, you know.
Yeah.
It's,
but I mean, even because we're the maps we're used to looking at, they scale Africa down.
Yeah.
And they scale the other countries on the poles up, so they're bigger. So sometimes you lose how big Africa actually is. It's gigantic.
As we'll see here, though, however, may be prudent to not dismiss entirely the pygmy's claims, because a startling number of such creatures, all sharing the fundamental similarities of form, lifestyle, habitat, were documented within the chronicles of creature zoology, not least of which are certainly highly enigmatic rock paintings discovered in the Bakkerom Ridge in South Africa's Orange Free State. How old this native bush artwork is, whether it dates back to mere couple of centuries or possibly significantly older, remains debatable. But even more so is what it depicts, which is that first picture I showed you.
Okay.
So we don't really know how old it is. There's a bunch of people arguing whether it's 400 years old or 4,000 years old, maybe even older. Mm. It first attracted attention in 1930 when it was depicting of the rock paintings in South Africa, a sermonious work by George William Stowe and Dorothy F. Bleak. The text of the book was written by anthropologist Bleak that accompanied its number of full-page illustrations that consisted of meticulous, often full-color copies of these South African pictographs. And there's been prepared between 1867 and 1882 by Stowe, an English-born trader, historian, geologist, who was passionate interest in African or South African native races, especially the tribes of the Bushmen. His travels as a trader had taken him to many of these little visited South African localities that contain these pictographs, and his interest in them had led them to prepare his copies, which provided very valuable because some of the originals no longer exist and have subsequently became damaged, worn, or destroyed. And some of them are inaccessible sites due to wars.
Okay.
So some of them are just in like no man's land.
Yeah.
Like you go there, you're just going to get shot.
Oh, okay. Well, like I'm assuming like war, like the Congo, how that's constantly under war.
Yeah, so I've talked about our friends from Malawi. Me and Emily have friends from Malawi, and they would talk about like all the countries around Malawi are at war.
Right.
The people from Malawi like can't leave Malawi unless they fly out.
It's constantly fighting.
Yeah. Malawi's not at war as far as at least the last time I talked to him.
Yeah.
But yeah. According to Bleak, the location of particular pictograph under consideration here is the Shirkin Nature article was a cave in the Breckford Ridge Breckford Ridge, situated in the Orange Free State farm named La Bee, France. It was owned back by Mr. Connor Sweenpool. It was subject was one of several strange portrayed creatures together. As now seen, it is a remarkable pictograph portraying an animal that bears a resemblance to that of a walrus.
Mm.
From its rounded head, displaying two very large, downward curving tusks, to its elongated tapering body and its paddle-like limbs. Indeed, its only prominent difference from the later pinniped is that it possessed a long tail, where differing 23 million years of evolution from the original terrestrial ancestors of walrus has lost its tail.
Hmm.
So that's, you know, because walruses don't have tails and where they have the little nubs.
Yeah.
Remember, their back flippers are actually their legs and their feet.
Right. It's not a tail.
Yeah. But this shows four limbs and a tail with a fluke.
Hmm. Like, remember the early, well, never mind. Nope. Go on. Keep going.
You can say it.
Nope.
It's going to come up.
Okay. We just did an episode on it recently.
Yeah. Last week.
Last week. The land whale.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
They had four limbs and they flew tail.
They did.
How interesting.
Hmm. Okay, moving on.
That is interesting.
It's like you were setting me up this week. See if I remembered. Mm. For once, I did.
No satisfactory mainstream zoological identification of these pictograph portrayed walrus lookalikes have been found so far. And none equally odd animals depicted alongside it. Like, this has some strange things. Like, this is showing some people, like, we'll get into it, whether it's mythical beast, which is what Bleak deemed them to be, mythical beast. It served as, you know, basically cryptozoological counterparts may have been reported across tropical Africa, and all these eyewitnesses claim testimonies of this problematic aquatic species. So Bleak kind of thinks that these five animals that it shows are just imaginated animals, which it shows the walrus,
mm-hmm,
that is laying on top of two gazelles, like it had killed them or trampled them.
Mm-hmm.
It has a long tail, fluke, four limbs, and its tusk. It shows what it appears to either be a bear or a warthog, the giant animal, with spines all over it. So one thought is it's a giant African porcupine.
Hmm.
So African porcupines have the giant standing quills.
Yeah. The ones you typically think of, like cartoon version of a porcupine.
Yeah. In a gigantic beast of a gazelle. Or an ibex or something like that, where it's what appears to be like a wildebeest-sized animal, but with the gazelle horns that go straight up.
Mm, okay.
And then a long serpentine creature with a spike on its tail and two horns coming off its nose.
Oh.
A long serpent with horns on its head.
Hmm.
Never heard that before.
Never. Not on this show.
And it shows three men like spearing at them from behind, as it appears that there is one man laying down and then four men running away from these creatures.
So is he like playing dead? So it comes
out? No, like it's got him.
I know. I was.
So whatever these creatures are, they appear to be either extremely dangerous, whether they're predators or not. We don't really know. It just shows that they are very dangerous. They could trample and they're huge if it's, you know, roughly to scale, which a lot of these pictographs were when it comes to this kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, because the one is, I mean, absolutely massive.
What if these were just like the, not that they were fake, but these were like the hyper predators, I guess, you know, these are the ones you avoid.
That's okay. We'll get to it, but that's kind of, I mean, we could talk about it now, but that's kind of where I lean towards, mm-hmm, that these are ancient apexes.
Yeah.
That are, so, I mean, if you're new to the show, you may not know, but if you listened for a while, we've talked about it. The fecundity, which is the amount of offspring and individuals that a species produces, goes way, way down the higher on the food chain an animal is. Super apex predators are extremely low in numbers.
Rare.
Yes. So, mm-hmm, like, let's say great white sharks, for example, a, mm-hmm, worldwide population of great white sharks.
Mm-hmm.
When we used to think it was 15 or 16,000, we now think it's much lower because of how migratory they are,
mm-hmm,
where it's only probably 2,500 to 5,000 animals on the planet.
It's almost like, you know, they talk about the food chain. You're at the top of the food chain or whatever. Mm-hmm. It should be like shaped like a food pyramid.
A lot of the food chains, when we were in class, like when I was a little kid, they were.
Yeah.
Like your highest, the higher you go up, the lower you are.
Right.
The base of the food chain has the most numerous animals.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you look, krill are one of the most numerous things on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, swarm, and they're the base of the almost the entire oceanic food chain are krill and plankton.
Right.
You could even say, you can exaggerate that even further, saying that they're probably the base food chain of most of the world.
I mean, you could, I think.
Krill and plankton.
Yeah.
So that's, I kind of think these four or five animals, because they always talk about Africa's big deadly five.
Mm.
These may have been prehistoric Africa's
big deadly
actually
five.
Actually deadly five.
Yeah.
Because elephants aren't on here. Wildebeest aren't on here. Leopards aren't on here. Like, these are animals, as far as the pictograph goes, much like another step above.
Well, during this time period, maybe, you know, elephants and leopards and stuff, either maybe they weren't as big as they are now. Or, you know,
They're in pictographs in these same cave systems. You can find them here.
Oh, really?
Well, yeah. It just, this scene with these four animals together.
Yeah.
Is showing a tribe of people running from them. Like, right. These are like
destruction and death. Yeah. Danger.
This marked prominence of the feature is acknowledged in various native names given to the jungle walrus by different native peoples throughout Africa. In Central Africa Republic, the CAR, for instance, the Bandi speak of the Moro in... The Moro in Goa, or the Moro Naga, which means roughly the leopard walrus, or sorry, the water leopard, which is referring to that same creature. Like if you point, if you show them, they say it has big tusk.
So they're calling it the water leopard.
Yeah. The Baya speak of the Deliai, which is the water lion. And the Shenho speak of the ZT Naga, or the ZT Gon, which is water panthers.
Hmm.
The Zandi speak of the Mani Mini, which is another word for water lion. Just to be different, though, they also call the Norgar, which is the water elephant.
Hmm.
Judge for all the last mentioned terms, these creatures are quite clearly feline in assertion, besides the water elephant. You know, leopards, lions, panthers. Assumption supported by various descriptions of the of them on record. According to an old Bandai tribesman called Musa, interviewed in 1934 by Lucien Borca, former chief game inspector of the French Equatorial Africa, subsequently spent into Chad, the CAR, the Republic of Congo, and Gabon. The Moroman Naga was somewhat larger than a lion in size. Musa estimated a length of about 12 feet. With an overall body shape and a pale background color reminiscent of that of a leopard. But additionally, a door with stripes. Curiously, its paw prints were described as containing a circle of it in the middle. So it contained a circle in the middle. Like it was walking on a big central pad.
Okay.
I kind of get it as describing like big felid webbed feet.
Well, yeah. Okay. Well, you need that if you're in the water.
Yeah. So we're starting to venture away from that direct art depiction of the creature. It, like I said, most of these names, that when you show them that, they point to it and they give it a water cat name. Hmm. Now, before I continue, what do you think of that?
The fact that they go to a water cat name?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it's swift like a cat in the water, you know? Maybe it's fast. I imagine maybe they know what cats are, like you said.
They have, I mean, the most famous big cats are almost all from Africa.
Yeah.
Or live in Africa.
And maybe they're just, cats are fast. And these things are in the water, they're fast, dangerous.
So that's, you hit one of the lines of thinking on this. Is it the lion, leopard, panther, whatever, you know, the names they add, are not describing the physical characteristics of the creature, but more of its behaviors.
Oh, okay.
Like you were saying, like big cats are almost always the apex, they're predators. So this is the apex predator of the water.
Okay.
It's, you know, just as ferocious as a big cat. So that's why they're calling it a water panther or a water leopard or a water lion. Not that it is a lion that is aquatic.
Right.
That it is an aquatic predator that is very similar to in behaviors to a lion.
Right.
The other flip side of that is saying that the opposite, basically. This is a water or a semi-aquatic large cat that the art depictions, like they did in medieval England, give it more streamlined features or more aquatic features to represent that nature.
That it's in the water.
Yes.
Okay. Both valid, I guess, reasons. No,
as of now, you know, yeah. Either one. That's the two kind of splits.
Right. Okay.
Is the picture more accurate or is the name more accurate?
What's in a name?
A lot.
Oh.
Apparently, Musa, at some stage, had observed one of these creatures emerging from the Kokoro River in close proximity to a soldier in a canoe. The Moranaga seized the helpless man and dragged him down into the water. As a result from the incident, The regiment from which the beast victim had belonged to decided not to cross the river at that point, therefore, but instead or insisted on a new location for some considerable distance to the east.
Okay.
So they watched, when he was a kid, he watched this creature come out of the water, grab a soldier out of a canoe and drag him down to his death. It scared the regiment of soldiers so much that they decided to go many, many miles down the river to cross.
That's wild. Well, I would too. I wouldn't even go in the water anymore if I witnessed that.
In 1945, a native game bearer called Mikitu drew a sketch of this creature, which showed a small head, large fang creature about 8 feet long with a plump, uniform, brown-colored body with a panther-like tail.
Okay.
So a walrus-like head.
With a panther-like tail.
A chunky, but not superly rotund body and a long panther-like tail.
Well, that's different already.
Mm-hmm. Intriguingly, I lost my spot. Give me 1 second.
No, because if it's a panther-like tail, what they're saying is it's a long, thick, heavy tail. Like a big cat, not a small house cat type tail.
Oh, yeah. Intriguingly, Bandai also used the name for the Mora Naga, which signifies a very different known species of creature. So a different group of people use the same name, but for a known animal.
Okay.
Central Africa's giant otter shrew.
Giant otter shrew.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Its English name derives from the depiction of its otter-like outward appearance and its former classification as a relative of the shrews with its taxonomic order Insectivora, but more recently has been reclassified as a member of the exclusive African taxonomy Afrosauridae, along with tenrex and golden moles. Like real otters, it lives an aquatic life, a pescivorous existence, but it has a head-to-body length of about 1 foot plus a slightly shorter tail, yielding a total mass that is not much smaller than that of a real otter, but also very much smaller than estimates of the Mora Naga. Nor does its ununiform patterning, brown fur with dorsal and paler ventricles, resemble that of what is primarily stripes or spotted coat of the later cryptid. Whether any suggestions of large fangs is basically conspiratorial, only in its abundance and its relation to the giant otter shrew. So basically, one of the tribes has a name for this giant otter shrew, which is only about 2 foot long. But okay. it's they thought it was a shrew, but it acts like an otter.
Okay.
Has a pretty big head with a long, thick tail, four little legs, only 2 foot long, though.
Okay.
So besides the fangs, it does kind of fit the description of this creature, besides the fangs and the size. It's man-eating attitude. And the color's wrong. So is it just that, or is it the same? Is it weird that it's the same word, or is it because it's kind of a similar creature, even though it's two separate groups of people?
It is kind of weird. It is weird, but is it a coincidence? Or
so what I would give you an example here in North America is drums.
Drums, okay.
Yeah, saltwater and freshwater drums.
Okay.
When you're in Florida, there's a fish called a drum. Sheephead.
Okay.
They are not related. One is considered a delicacy. One has purple and white stripes. One is just silver.
And they're both called sheephead?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, just saying inside of a country, let alone a whole continent, there is two words for a fish called a sheephead that are extremely different.
Fair. Okay.
That's how I would compare it. But they're fish. They both have pharyngeal teeth. They both eat like mussels and stuff like that. But on the outward appearance, they're very, very different animals.
Mm-hmm.
Man. So during December of 1994 through January of 1995, Belgian cryptozoologist Eric Joy led a two-man expedition dubbed Operation Mora Naga in search of this elusive creature. Although they failed to spy any itself, Joy and his team and their hunting guide, Willie Bloom, succeeded in gathering some very interesting anecdotal evidence, probably the most extensive observations since the material collected during the 1930s. Claiming to have narrowly avoided being patrolled into the river by such an animal, as he set his nets at the river's edge one afternoon in February 1958, the native guide called Marcel told Joy that the Mora Naga hunts in pairs.
Ooh.
One waiting in the river to seize any prey chased into the water by the other.
This sounds familiar for some reason.
Mm. According to Marcel, the Mora Naga, compared with a leopard in size and shape. And its plumage is obscure, dappling with blue and white spots. It's very distinct upon its back, but less well-defined along its flanks. So it has some really colorful spots on its like back and shoulders, and its pattern kind of fades when it gets like towards the bottom.
Okay.
But its teeth are very large and resemble those of big cats such as leopards and lions. Marcel followed the Mora Naga's trail, in which a leopard's, or it was just like that of a leopard's, but much bigger. Although when it runs, it leaves behind an impression of claws, which are not usual for that of leopards and other big cats.
Correct.
Because they're sheathed when they're running.
Right.
The exception is cheetahs.
Others not?
Because they use their claws for traction for high speed.
Oh, that's how they're so fast.
That's an adaptation they have for high speed.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so what do you think of that? So one of the, well, this guy, 1995, so we were both alive.
Yeah.
So his guide had seen one, and they did not see one, but very, very similar to like Bokelian Bembe and some of the other Congo, you know, the Congo, for anybody that doesn't know, is
gosh,
a horrible place.
That you're talking the just like the jungle there, like the environment.
No, I'm more talking about the guerrilla warfare.
I guess there's that too. Yeah.
That you'll die.
Yeah,
I mean, no, the wildlife. It's very similar to Australia, is in that everything will kill you.
Yeah, that's what I thought you're getting at. It's very dangerous and big.
I mean, even the Kongamoto, like there's a bunch of monsters.
Yeah, everything's bigger there too.
Like, I mean, there are real animals, and then there are cryptid animals that are real animals, but like. The one guys that found the Kongamotos were looking for the Mokelian Bembe, and they were almost all murdered by Kongamotos.
Yeah.
A different cryptid.
Monster, yeah.
And then there's just guerrilla warfare, and people get kidnapped constantly and held for ransom.
It's sad and scary.
And there's a huge, huge, huge sex slave trade. You can't research in the Congo anymore.
No, it's just not safe to go to.
Because you're just going to die.
Just not safe.
So, yeah, they go to the Congo, and his guide had seen one when he was a kid.
Hmm. That's pretty awesome. What did he say it was?
I just read that. That was the whole thing I just read.
Oh, I know, but what did he say, though? It finally, he should have wrote it down. It's actually this animal.
He said it's that. It's a Mora Naga.
Come on. He's saying it is a walrus. It is a, you know.
It is a polka-dotted walrus.
There we go. Okay.
The second so-called water leopard to be is the Nezomedian, spoken of by the natives of the Nuri district in Cameroon. It was documented in a book called Gorillas Were My Neighbors from 1956, written by Fred G. Merrifield and Harry Miller. The locals claimed this type of leopard that lived in small rivers and frequently carried off women and children specifically. After several failed attempts to spot the dangerous mysterious beast, one of the book's authors believed that they had finally seen one. Here's what he wrote.
Okay.
One morning, just as it was getting light, the animal swam rapidly upstream and landed on the opposite bank. The light was still poor, and all I could see was something furry, spotted, and four-legged. So I fired. The animal spun around and dived back into the water. I thought it was lost, but when the sun arose and my men had turned up, we found it dead and washed ashore a few hundred yards downstream.
Oh, we got it.
Mm-hmm. It was a big dog otter, a very old fellow whose fur had gone gray and blotchy with age, giving it the appearance of these spots. The natives would not admit to me that this was the Nuzumend, as having no more time to spare, I gave up and went home.
Hmm. Interesting. So a dog otter he shot, huh?
Mm-hmm. Which we would call them just giant otters today.
Okay. Not literal. Okay. Hmm. You think it's possible?
Okay. Well, I mean, there's how much you want to get into it. So I'm a big believer that a lot of the North American water panthers are referring to a spiritual version of giant river otters.
Does it have to be spiritual, though?
I don't mean spiritual, as in... I mean, like, a spiritualized, because, like, the guardians of the underworld, like, water panthers are the guardians of the underworld, and...
Okay.
Like, that side of it.
Okay.
But I think the animal that they're referring to when they talk about water panthers with their aggression and everything like that in North America are giant river otters. know, 6 feet long. Like, a woman just killed Chicago a couple years ago by one. Like, they are not ocean otters, sea otters.
They're different.
Yeah. And people often conflate the two with behaviors.
What?
Giant, or so there's, or giant river otters are monsters in their own right. They are incredibly intelligent pack animals with coordinated hunts, which is talking about some of the stuff that they've already talked about with the jungle walrus, you know, coordinated hunts, running things into the water to be taken out by the other ones, you know, which is a lot of strategy. That's a lot of intelligence. That's a lot of pre-planning.
Right.
So for North America, I think that is some of the stuff. And we've talked about some of the South American cryptids that also fall into that, with the Amazonian giant river otter that commonly fights and kills leopards and caiman. So where they make up for in size,
that's impressive,
is their pack and intelligence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and they're gnawing bites.
So I can see, I'm not saying that Henry was right, but I can see where he's coming from. When he shot a giant dog otter, aka their version of a giant river otter, he killed one and was kind of spotted, and it was huge. You know, it's 6.5, 7 feet long. And you're like, yeah, this could eat a kid.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that could kill a woman.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, not saying it couldn't kill a man, too, but, you know, they're just not dumb, right? So humans are sexually dimorphic. You know, women, and that's averages for everybody at home. You know, women are generally, I think it's like 35 or 40% smaller than men on averages. You know, we're talking generic averages and everything that. So it's, you know, they're eating, they're quote unquote easier targets for a predator because they have less mass to fight with.
Okay.
And a child even more so.
Okay.
So I can see where he's coming from. I'm not saying he's right yet, but I can definitely see where he shot this thing. It's spotted. It's an aquatic creature. It's like a panther in the water and you could see it killing a kid. So I can be like, and he's holding it up to the tribe people. Is this it?
And they're like,
no,
no.
And he's like, all right, well, I'm out of time.
Yeah.
I shot something that looked
cool.
That looks like the thing you're talking about.
And you're saying it's not it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I can see where he's coming from. And maybe he's not right. Maybe he just shot a giant dog otter. Lucine Blunin Lewitt, or sorry, learnt a little concerning type, or another type of supposed aquatic mysterious cat in the area, the Delhi. According to his interpreter at the Bozen in eastern Ubudi, which is a French colony, it possessed the body of a horse and the claws of a lion and was large walrus-like tusk. This last noted feature was mentioned by the native guards in this area, too.
Okay.
And it was very formidable because of its tusk could pierce armor.
Okay.
Their armor they had during the day, like, lion, they would have stuff to kind of stop cats and stuff if they got a hold of them.
Scratching them or
biting
them.
From piercing them.
Yeah.
And these guys had long enough tusk to get right through it.
Didn't make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Then there was the Nez Tigon, nocturnal beast of leopard status, having red fur marked with pale stripes and or spots, living within hollows and large rivers that it would dig, that emitted a thunderous bellowing call.
I'd want to see one of these.
So these are all kind of the same, like these are like either regional variants or all kind of the same legend across the Congo and Africa.
Yeah.
But yeah, so this is saying that they live in these hollows in the riverbanks that they make.
Okay.
And you can tell they're there because they're giant thunder calls.
Gotcha. And then they're red fur.
So, yeah. The Melbourne tribe of Eastern Olga speak of the Koij Wai Miri, which roughly translates to water lion, which is attracted the interest of the Isles Van Nobles during the Sojourn when he was there in the early 1930s, at which she subsequently wrote about this article and published it in the Pyramidic Duchess Kulmas in 1930, which is just a magazine.
Okay.
In 1939. Like the Nez Tigon, the beast is well known by the natives for its loud rumbling vocals. And although partially aquatic, sometimes it ventures forth onto dry land to hunt. Like that of other beasts mentioned here, it is also armed with these extremely large canine teeth and or tusk that supposedly kills hippopotamuses with.
Ooh, it guts them.
No.
What's it do?
It gets on. She has a picture of our drawing of one. Give me a second. Supposedly kills hippopotamus with it, despite it being quite smaller in body size than hippos. The observations and detailings of Von Noble and this region's natives considered her that the Corvemara was not based upon misidentified sightings of crocodiles and or hippos or any other species that they knew about. It was its own creature. So they draw it kind of like a giant saber-toothed cat with like a big paddle tail and these claws. It would get on the back of hippos
and
use the saber tooth to bite the base of their neck and sever their spine.
Ooh.
Even though it's much, much smaller than hippos.
Oh, yeah. I wonder why it's on that list.
Yeah. She was eventually convinced of the sincerity of the Portuguese lorry divers, who told her that the companies of some native. He had actually tracked one of these creatures that had chased after and killed a hippo. Sure enough, the tracks of the two beasts that it led to a mutilated carcass of a hippo. Yet no part had been eaten.
So it just tore it open?
It just ripped its back of its head open, ripped up its body and left.
Maybe it was checking the maker on its... Or I don't know. Never mind. Just keep going.
Okay. Interesting. Although somewhat reminiscent of an elephant in shape, the additional consistency of its impression of its toes... Oh, it's tracks. Once again, it has that big round pad.
In the middle,
in the middle, like an elephant.
But
you can see the cat-like features with the claws.
With the claws thing. Yeah. That's the important part.
And once again, think of other Congos, creatures, cryptids. What don't they like? What did Mokele and Bembe absolutely hate?
Elephants. Elephants.
Hippos.
Hippos, you're right, is hippos. The other big pachyderm.
They hated hippos. They would kill on sight.
Because they were hiding, they were, what they call it, the Mokele and Bembe translates to like...
The one who stops rivers flow and or the hippo killer.
Yes. Okay. So yeah,
Now, before I continue, we could talk about that for a second. It can either be that hippos are famous for their aggression and their large herd sizes.
Yeah.
They're ecosystem engineers. So they absolutely, in smaller systems, destroy what's there and make it their own kind of system. So let's say if you're a smaller cat or cat-like creature and you have your babies nearby, hippos are not good news.
Oh, no.
So the second you leave your babies alone, the hippos are going to kill them.
Yeah, go stomp them.
Or like Mokele and Bembe we talked about, being direct competition for food resources.
Okay.
So a herd of hippos can wipe out what we believe Mokele and Bembe, the plants Mokele and Bembe was eating.
Okay.
So that's why Mokele and Bembe probably hated hippos, is because whenever they came in the area, it'd run out of food.
All the food's gone, yeah.
So there's, besides predation, there's other cryptid accounts of just cryptids not liking hippos, not like being around hippos.
Well, it's because they're jerks.
They are. Worth noting here that far back as 1947, in the Cosmo article, renowned German cryptozoologist Dr. Igno Cumberbeagle had suggested a surviving saber-toothed cat as a possible identifier for this water lion.
Okay. Like a prehistoric saber-toothed cat that swims?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, that is aquatic and is dealing with these creatures. Do you remember any other African cryptids we've covered that may be like that?
Searching. Should I know? I should know, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
I don't know. You gotta have to tell me.
It's gonna be later, so.
Okay, I'll wait. We'll put a pin in it.
Also worth keeping in mind is certain Nagin horn folktales of the Warmawi people from Zimbabwe documented the African genesis, which is from 1938. Professor Leah Farbus and Douglas Fox reference some very odd fields, which is this Lions Underwater, and it's self-entitled The Water Lions. Could these be comparable to their neighboring countries of the Kanji Maya? Other, you know, basically the same creature. So as we're spreading out, this is not little localized. This is all over equatorial tropical Africa.
Okay.
If it's tropical Africa, there's legends of a water panther.
Okay.
They're very rare, but they're always aggressive. They're always apex predators. They're nothing to be messed with.
You weren't talking about the Nundi bear, were you?
No.
Ah, darn it.
Good guess.
Oh, thank you. I don't know. Then still don't know.
That's fine. The Zira or the Azi in the native African tribes are indigenous to the northeastern part of the Dominican Republic of the Congo and the Republic of South Sudan and southeastern sections of the CAR, which is a combination are often referred to as Zinderland. The Zindi people speak of several mysterious beasts that may possibly be cryptozoological in nature. One of the most interesting of these is the Marmami, or the water leopard, but one that sounds very different from both the previous versions. In the article published in the Journal of Man in September of 1963, Oxford anthropologist Professor E.E. Evans noted that the Zandi's version of the water leopard, had been described to him as follows. The water leopard is a powerful kind of beast, dark with blackish skin, and the head with hair shaggy on its neck. Its pads were very large, and its palms were hairless like that of a man, and it had powerful teeth in its mouth. It seizes a person as a crocodile does. It appears in places of extremely deep water. Its eyes are very large and red, like the seeds of the Nazi veggies, which are tomatoes. They're like tomatoes. Oh, okay. They're not actually tomatoes.
Yeah,
but it's like an African version of a tomato.
Okay.
It lives in holes as crocodiles do, but where it resides, there is water and many fish in it. These waters never dry up, for it is its home. So there's some interesting information there that he had found from the Zandi people. Once again, blackish head of shaggy hair, which is different. Most of these big, like maybe not bald head, but like very tight fur, like an otter.
What'd you say earlier? There was hair like on it. I don't know. I thought you were going to describe me for a second because you said hairless knuckles. I thought you were going to just
hairless palms like a human.
Hairless palms, but you said like a flap of hair on the back of its head.
It has a mane running down its neck. On its head.
I thought you were going into a joke. It's me out there. One of my clones.
I think you're sensitive about things and you're personifying things.
Oh, I think I'm really trying. Well, first I'm trying to figure out what that one thing is still, but I'm like really like picking it apart. So I'm like, wait a minute. I heard that. Here we go. Set up. But I guess not.
Yeah.
I'm just ready. I'm ready.
With powerful teeth in its mouth. It seizes the person like a crocodile. Like keep mine a couple stories ago or a couple different actual names for this creature ago. What'd it do? It jumped in the boat, grabbed the guy, and just dragged him underwater like a crocodile.
Mm-hmm.
Players in places of deep water. So that, you know, surmises probably a large creature. Hippos are often not found in water deeper than like, I think it's 15 feet.
Yeah.
Because they have to breathe air and they run and hop.
Right. Yeah. They don't swim.
Right. So they need to be able to hop up to breathe even. So if they're deep enough where they can't, they're not going to be there. It appears like that. It has very extremely large and red eyes. So if you think of a lot of aquatic creatures, walruses, for example, have really large bulbous eyes.
Okay.
And they almost always look bloodshot. They have very vascularized eyes.
Okay.
So they're not bloodshot. They just kind of give that appearance. Well, their eyes aren't red. But, you know, you can just kind of look like they've been drinking all night.
Yeah. Super tired.
Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah, I'm 3 days. I haven't slept. very large, like seeds. They live in holes. So we're talking again, keep in mind a couple different types of creature go. Holes in the riverbank like crocodiles do.
Right.
So we're talking about the same behaviors across the board, even though there's some differences. But it lives in waters that do not dry up with lots of fish.
Okay.
So this could be why it's confined to equatorial, aka tropical Africa.
Okay.
Because if it gets too far out of the Congo Basin, it's seasonal.
Ah, okay.
So the waters are seasonal.
Gotcha.
It's highly dependent on the water.
Okay.
So even hippos will live in, like, obviously they live all over Africa in seasonal watersheds and everything. So to me, this is speaking of that. If it dries up, you're not going to find one of these creatures there.
Okay.
You'll find crocodiles and you'll find hippos.
Yeah.
You won't find these guys.
Okay.
Just interesting things when you're really kind of, when we're trying to ID what this thing could be.
Mm-hmm.
There are flavors, I guess, that are hidden in the legends and lore that really speak to behaviors of a natural animal.
Which is, you know, I think the one of the best parts about this show is pointing out those and making an educated ID.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any guesses? I mean, this would probably be a two-parter because we're already at 48 minutes. And
There's a lot more, huh? Okay. Yeah, we'll take this to two.
But, I mean, do you have any ideas so far what you would guess at, what you would poke at this water, or sorry, this freshwater walrus could be?
Well, I mean, I haven't said it yet, but like we did last week, that episode, the Akhlut, whatever, however you say it. I mean, that was a weird, odd Inuit legend, you know,
the whale cousin.
Right. Well, I mean, I just meant,
Ambulocetus.
Ambulocetus. There you go. You know, that's what we what I kind of settled on that one being. But, you know, this does kind of fit a lot of similar, I don't want to say behaviors. We didn't get too much behaviors with the other thing. But, you know, being in the water, the shape, in the water, out of the water.
Hunting on both.
Ambushing.
Being compared to your local apex predator.
Yeah.
Huh. That's odd, isn't it?
It is. So.
Wasn't planned at all.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Huh. Nudge, wink. Okay.
No, but yes. You're right. Just, it does have, to the ocelot, some very, very, big similarities of this, where I think the ocelot, we talked about it in that episode, but I think there's a lot more spirituality
involved in that one with.
Maybe personified onto it, where we talked about it. If it's a flesh and blood, non-paranormal creature, that they just imbued it for religious purposes and warnings and everything with those more paranormal aspects. Or it is paranormal. I don't know. I'm not there. I haven't seen one. So
right, exactly. Yeah.
I can't.
The biggest difference, though, between this and that is their location. Being in Africa, in the jungle, river systems.
In Alaska? They're very similar.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yeah, very similar. That's where I'll draw the line saying, okay, it's probably not the same creature. But it's whatever it is, it's very, very, very similar. Mm-hmm. But I would imagine it's not the same thing, or it's something that is a cousin, relative, or maybe even I don't know what you call it, just something similar and close, but I don't think it's the same thing just for that reason alone.
So we talked about with the ocelot that it was one, I kind of think it was a seasonal visitor to Alaska
because
it was only there for the changing seasons. So I thought it was an open ocean navigator that would come in for just for that change for the seal pups.
Yeah.
And the salmon runs.
And the salmon runs, yep. Food.
Yeah. Which is not uncommon for Alaska.
Yeah.
Alaska is seasonally extremely abundant. And oceanic megafaunal species that's what they do. They time up their migrations, birth, with all of these. There are residential animals like belugas and, all that. But a lot of the oceanic navigators, which are these animals that spend 90% of their life in open ocean, hundreds of miles from land, where they will visit Alaska just for those times.
Mm-hmm.
But they visit other places. So white sharks, and we already mentioned those ones that, today, where the Cape Horn of Africa, the same white sharks that are there will be the same white sharks in Virginia. Well, and then eventually it'll be the same white sharks off the coast of California, a whole different ocean.
Wow.
So it could be a similar or same species where they are coming into the Congo from the ocean.
Okay.
Seasonally or rarely. Or even like we've talked about with Pinky. We just did an episode on Pinky with the volcanic ocean or the volcanic Russian lake monster that floods in, where we talked about this giant herbivorous lake river monster. It's very similar to the descriptions of Pinky, where we talked about Pinky being the maned sea serpents.
Mm.
Pinky was just old and sunburnt.
Yeah.
And that's why he was pink. And because he wasn't like hot neon pink, it was that like walruses even kind of turn that kind of pink when they get really sick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Walruses?
Yeah.
Huh.
You can kind of tell they're going to die soon because of it.
Well, they lose all their color.
They kind of flush their color. So they have defensive. It's a long, big process. But yeah, they just kind of turn really pale. And it's like kind of like a sickly pink. instead of being like, what color is a walrus? Did you realize what colors I've been calling these things?
I guess not. What color?
So most of them are dark brown with spots and stripes.
Uh-huh.
Some of them have been red.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I said red.
I guess I just, walruses? Or,
well, no, I'm talking about
these
talking
things.
About, yeah.
Sorry.
Walruses.
Jungle walruses. I thought you meant actual walruses.
What color are walruses?
Well, I just always picture them as like dark gray or dark black or blue.
No.
What are they?
Brown and red.
Wow. Okay.
Actual walruses are brown and red.
I don't really think about that. I guess I just picture them like seals. You know what I mean?
And red. I'm using the term red loosely. Like, it's not like,
not like
fire truck red.
No. Like red hair on somebody, you know, not like carrot top.
Not like that.
Yeah.
More like a...
the subtle...
Yeah, most of the time they're brown with a little bit of red. And older walruses, especially big males, will get stripes and spots around their neck and shoulders. Most of that is due to their fat folds.
Yeah.
But it, from a distance, it appears that they have stripes and spots.
Really interesting.
And they also shed. They, like a lot of seals and sea lions do, they shed that like... their outer layer of fur in the summer months. And that can cause them to look spotted and everything like that, or striped.
Gotcha.
Because their fur is so dense. It's not very long, but it's incredibly dense. And that can even cause them to have these giant peels of fur.
Where they see their skin?
Not even their skin, just like, it's just that it looks like chunks of fur are hanging off.
Okay.
So I'll keep reading. We'll end it here soon. Yeah, this will be at least be a two-parter. Professor Evans was then told that the strange creature has hair like that of a man that falls all over his body. And he noted this from Major P.H. Lunkman, that stated in the article published in 1926 that water leopards are said to live in deep pools within large rivers with big fissures in their banks and of the rivers that are often pointed out by locals as being these aquatic cryptids' homes in warning people to stay away. Very similar to Mokele Mbembe. So, like in some of the early documentaries before the Congo was shut down in like the early 2000s, they said the locals took some of like Monster Quest and everything like that to Mokele Mbembe dens. They said during the dry season, they would dig out these burrows and they would bury themselves in and only leave a tiny hole for air.
For breathing, yeah.
And they actually found them. And they found like two or three of them. And they were, the goal, they ran out of camera line. But they found this hole and it opened back up and they couldn't tell what made it. So, and then the Congo was shut down. So I really think like these specific cryptids, why they're not discovered right now are because of the wars and the conflicts in the Congo.
There's no research.
Mm-hmm. You can't.
Yeah, exactly. How can you?
If you watch like the Monster Quest and all that, like I really think that if they would have had 10 more years of being able to get in there every once in a while and bring stuff, they would have found Mokele Mbembe. They would have found, because they were on, like they found what they said for Mokele, these giant holes in the vegetation that look very, very similar to Java rhinos and the now formed separate species African bush elephants.
Oh, okay.
Which I'm not saying Mokele is an African bush elephant, but when these big herbivores that live in very, very dense forest, they make these tunnels.
Right.
And they make whole ecosystem paths. So Java rhinos, they just discovered, so there was only 50 until like 2 months ago.
Wow.
Like left. They used scent dogs, and they found a whole undocumented population of 250.
Holy cow.
Because it's a rhino.
Yeah, but the jungle's just gigantic. That's what I'm saying,
is they're so secretive.
Yeah.
And they're so good at hiding.
And they found 250 that they had no idea about.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Which isn't, I mean, it's a lot, but isn't, you know. But
it is for rhinos if you see them all at once.
But you can get into Java. You can go into Java. You can't go into the Congo.
I think it just,
like me and you, if we went to the Congo, we'd be dead within 12 hours. Yeah, or probably. We'd be held for ransom. A lot of times they kill people and then try to hold them for ransom.
And peel your skin off.
I'm not saying they tore, but like they'll just shoot you.
Okay.
And then they'll write for ransoms for your countries.
Oh gosh, yeah, that's not good. Hopefully the pygmy people will save you that live in the Congo.
If there was any left.
Well, I mean, as of 20 years ago, there was.
Yeah.
That guy that found him in that village.
Mm-hmm. He's seen Kongomotos.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
He's been on Joe Rogan a couple times.
David Choi or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's seen Kongomotos.
That's wild. I mean, the Congo, yes. Congo is so big and so unresearched. Anything is possible to be out there. If these guys are still hanging on, that's one thing or another. But if they were there in the first place, without question, especially if they're writing them down, there's no reason they, the odds for them, you know, just being, you know, fake or, you know, just kind of personified or a made up creature by them. I would think very unlikely, just because we know just about anything can exist in the Congo. And there's, I guess, infinity and potential. Beyond. Infinity and beyond potential of what could exist there. Just because, yes, zero research.
Like I mentioned, with Kongamotos have been seen. Like your Choi. Mm-hmm. He seen one when he got lost, when the pygmies saved him.
Mm-hmm.
He said when, so the pig, the Kongamotos live in the wetlands there.
Yeah.
And he was, cause that's when he was looking for the pygmies in the Mokele and Mbembe.
Right.
And he found a Kongamoto and he said, they're evil. They're awful. Like, and they're flying. And that's how everybody describes them, is you don't want to find Kongamotos cause they're going to eat you.
Yeah.
They're just flying little monsters.
Yeah. It sounds terrible.
And we, like, Monster Quest found Mokele and Mbembe dens.
Mm-hmm.
Where they were exactly how the natives described them. And they're like, yep, they're sleeping in there right now, but they're really far back there. That's just what they do every, you know, I really don't know. And then these guys, where there's 20 different natives have gone over for them,
mm-hmm.
and it's all roughly the same animal. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's variations and differences and everything like that. And I don't know. I got ideas and I got animals I got for when we get next episode, when we actually start breaking down some of this stuff.
Yeah.
I have things you've never heard of.
Oh, boy.
Like Ambulocetus.
Yeah.
You think Ambulocetus is impressive? Wait till I bring up this other thing that you've never heard of.
So stay tuned.
But I think, I mean, you got anything to end on for this part?
No, I think that was perfect.
All right. Well, I've been the Great and Powerful Mystery.
And I've been J-Clone 9000.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.